It's got a death curse.
So it's bothering me like me.
And then who locked you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Things happen hereabout they don't tell about. I see things.
It gives you the idea that this did happen at some point, and everybody in the 70s bought it. This was before the internet.
Yeah.
This was before everybody could say, no, this is fake, this never happened, click this link and I'll prove it. Right.
You boys don't want to go mess around the old house. Those things is dangerous. You're liable to get hurt.
This may be the purest distillation of insanity I have ever seen captured on film.
Fucked up imagery in this. This is the kind of shit you tie someone to a chair and hold their eyeballs open while playing Mozart.
I think the best part of, one of the best parts of this movie is that your imagination took you to where you thought it should go.
You just shut up, remember, you're just a cook, and me and him will handle this!
For the longest time, that movie was the go-to movie. It was like, okay, you think you're a horror fan? Can you handle the Texas Chainsaw Massacre? Welcome back to Horror 101, where we are educating your fears. I'm your host, Cash Wampum, and sad but true, 2015 sees the end of another horror icon. We got word that Gunnar Hansen passed away recently at the age of 68 from pancreatic cancer at his home in Maine. So, naturally, we're going to take this opportunity to spotlight his greatest claim to frightening fame, which was his portrayal of Leatherface in 1974. We're going to show the film to a crew member who's never seen it, which is always a great time. Plus, we're going to have our guest, the son of celluloid, Nathan Hamilton, or Chainsaw Nate, as some call him. We've had him on the show before, and I couldn't think of anyone better than to help us say goodbye to Mr. Hansen and dig deep into Chainsaw lore. So sit right back and relax as the world-famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nick McPherson, the lovely dude, and I give the Horror 101 treatment to Toby Hooper's Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Hey, look, I got some good barbecue here. Why don't you fellas stick around here a while?
Once again, we have a death in the horror community. Who is it this time? Nude.
Gunnar Hansen.
Who played?
Leatherface in the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
There was two movies in the early 70s that really bothered a lot of people. What was the other one? Nude?
Exorcist.
It was The Exorcist. I remember growing up, and I used to like asking adults when I was a kid, which movies did you watch growing up in the 70s that really bothered you? And there was always two. There was The Exorcist in 73, and then The Texas Chainsaw Massacre in 1974. The title just tells you you're in for a really bad ride.
Right.
It's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah.
There's going to be a massacre, it's going to involve a chainsaw, and I'm willing to bet that it's set in Texas. Ye motherfucking ha.
It's 90 minutes of watching chainsaws getting smashed.
I remember reading an interview, Toby Hooper, when he was younger in the 70s, he was at some sort of hardware store or something, and it was hot, and he wanted to get out of there, and he was stuck in line at the cashier, and he happened to be looking over at a display of chainsaws, and it just occurred to him, in his warped fucking mind, he's like, oh, you know what, I'd just love to grab a chainsaw and just fucking cut my way through this line. And that's the genesis of where this movie came from.
This is the movie that Rex Reed called the most horrifying motion picture I have ever seen. This film is positively ruthless in its attempt to drive you right out of your mind.
Now, has everybody seen this movie?
No. Yes.
I have.
Nick has not seen this film.
Nine.
Which is fucking great, because this movie's over 40 years old, and we've got somebody here who's never seen it. Okay, Brian Stewart, when's the last time you've seen this film?
I saw it about 2 years ago. It was at a film screening at The Fog, here in Windsor. The Fog Lounge used to do a film series. And right around Halloween, they did Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I had seen it once previously. And it was actually more settling the second time around, because I'd forgotten a lot about it. It's been about 10 years between viewings. And it was strange, because I thought I knew the film, but I wasn't really prepared for it. I don't remember how chaotic it was, because the film style doesn't seem like there's a plan at all. It doesn't seem like the kind of movie that has storyboards or is carefully, precisely detailed. It feels like you've walked into a crazy person's house and this is their home videos.
The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. After you stop screaming, you'll start talking about it.
So yeah, you know what? We're running late, so let's run the movie. We'll hit the lights.
All right.
We'll hit the lights. We'll get this going.
I was actually going to make a Silence of the Lambs joke, because you said earlier it just came out of nowhere. It's like multiple makes.
That's right.
They were slaughtering the spring lambs in trial.
The film which you are about to see is an account of the tragedy which befell a group of five youths, in particular, Sally Hardesty and her invalid brother, Franklin. It is all the more tragic in that they were young. But had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected, nor would they have wished to see as much of the mad and macabre as they were to see that day. For them, an idyllic summer afternoon drive became a nightmare. The events of that day were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Fun bit of trivia. According to John Larroquette, his payment for doing the opening narration was a joint.
Small budget, man. Small budget. But that voice is very... That's Dan Fielding.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know that voice.
Yeah. Multiple Emmy Award winner.
It gives you the idea that this did happen at some point. This is a dramatization of something real that happened to these kids at some point. And everybody in the 70s bought it. This was before the internet.
Yeah.
This was before everybody could say, no, this is fake, this never happened, click this link and I'll prove it.
Right.
This was way before that, so when people went into the show, you know, when this guy's coming out with a chainsaw running after people, they were like, no, I can't deal with this. I cannot deal with this if this really happened.
Grave robbing in Texas is this hour's top news story. An informant led officers of the Muerto County Sheriff's Department to a cemetery just outside the small rural Texas community of Newt early this morning. Officers there discovered what appeared to be a grisly work of art, the remains of a badly decomposed body wired to a large monument.
Let's discuss this now. The opening of the film I thought was brilliant, where you can hear a news reporter, like off the radio, talking about desecration of a grave. Yeah, graves were desecrated, there was parts of bodies removed, no suspects are apprehended. All these people are at large. I like that part of the story. And it, boom, it gives you the shot of this corpse in the sun, and then the camera slowly draws back to see this horrible monument of just macabre art that was made by somebody that's fucking twisted.
Yeah.
And that's the beginning of the film. Like, who the fuck did that?
It's like a,
you're gonna know.
Yeah.
Real soon.
I mean, Hooper, I think, is trying to infect you with certain ideas or a certain mood. He does it with the artwork and he does it with the introduction of the hitchhiker. Those scenes and those moments don't leave. They're still lingering in the back of your mind. I mean, the mood is set and it's pretty well indelible. Like, you can't shake that feeling.
My granddaddy's buried here. Can we find out if anything happened to him?
What's your granddaddy's name?
Honey, that big, heavy feller to stand with that flashlight in his hand, that's the sheriff. You go tell him your granddaddy's buried in there.
Okay.
He'll let you in.
Thank you.
Been in there the whole time, unbeknownst. Things happen hereabout they don't tell about.
I see things.
They get to the graveyard near the beginning of the film, and Sally wants to get out because she's got family members there that were buried. She wants to make sure that none of her family members were desecrated. So as she's being ushered in by one of the guys there, that one drunk that's on the ground and he's got the bottle over and he's just kind of writhing around and through insanity just kind of mumbling this mumbo jumbo, and I'm watching this guy going, like, if I was there watching this, I'd be like, this guy's fucking freaky.
Right.
You know, he had nothing to do with the story. He was just this drunk that just happened to be there writhing around in this tall grass with beer on him talking nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, and even then, when things are supposed to be on the up and up, things are safe, there's still fucking insanity there.
You see, they say it's just an old man talking. You laugh at an old man. There's them that laughs and knows better.
I think one of the things that really sells this movie for me is that none of the actors come across as actors. They don't seem like polished theatrical people at all. They just seem like a group of average kids actually driving and talking like real people.
And this was another thing that probably worked, just like the same thing like Blair Witch Project worked. We didn't know any of those people. They were nobodies, so they could be in any situation.
Okay.
This heat is just driving me crazy. I don't know if I can take much more.
The condition of retrogradation is contrary or inharmonious to the regular direction of actual movement in the zodiac.
Have you been doing those Reader's Digest word power columns again?
Jerry, it just means Saturn's a bad influence. It's just particularly a bad influence now because it's in retrograde.
Hey, man, you believe all that stuff your old lady's hawking me?
I don't know.
These people could be in any situation and we could buy it because we're not seeing it. Like, the remake had Jessica Biel in it, you know, the sexy pants, and she was nice to look at, but I knew...
Sexy pants!
I've seen her in other things, so I can't really buy that this is real. In this movie, you can buy... You've never known... You never knew any of these people.
I still don't know them. The people don't look overly, you know, actor-esque either, especially the people at the gas station, like the hitchhiker, the people at the gas station. These are frequently weird-looking people. They don't look like they cast these roles. They just pull people out of
the
street. Yeah, that's it.
Hitchhiker.
Should we pick him up?
Oh, yeah, man. Pick him up. He'll asphyxiate out there.
What does he look like?
Well, the son of a bitch is going to smell just like the slaughterhouse.
Oh, give the guy a break. He can sit by Franklin.
What do you want to do?
Oh, he's weird looking. No!
There's a few lessons to be learned from this film. It is a cautionary tale. The first lesson we're going to learn real quick, and that is don't ever, under any circumstances, especially in Texas, pick up a hitchhiker.
I think we just picked up Dracula.
Where are you headed, man? South, you work at that place?
Oh, no.
How did you get stuck way out here?
I was at the slaughterhouse.
I got an uncle that works at a slaughterhouse.
Hey, my brother worked there. My grandfather, too.
My family's always been in me.
Hey, man, what happened?
And up until that, all you really have is the hitchhiker, and the hitchhiker kind of throws you off, because that guy's fucking strange.
Yeah.
But they get rid of him. He's gone. He's like, okay, he sliced Franklin's arm, they stop the van, they kick him out, they're off, and they're safe again. So you're like, okay, no problem. That was just a really weird episode. No problem. The day's going to go on.
That's the last goddamn hitchhiker I ever...
Hey, you know where the old Franklin place is?
The old Franklin place?
Yeah, it's an old two-story rock house and sitting up on a hill. I think you have to turn on that road back there, but I'm not real sure.
Yeah, maybe I seen something like that up that way. When I look, you boys don't want to go mess around the old house?
Remember when we did, I'm not sure which episode or if we just had a plain discussion about the Harbinger of Doom. Did we ever include...
Yeah,
Massacre?
This totally fit in because they had a conscious choice.
Yeah, I don't think
he even warned them. Don't go there.
You don't want to go fooling around other folks' property. Some folks don't like it, and they don't mind showing you.
Oh, my father owns it.
And that's your daddy's place, huh?
There's still an element of the Harbinger of Doom. Yeah. Don't go there.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, she's absolutely right.
And just like any good horror movie, the main characters ignore that friendly suggestion and wind up getting themselves into some serious fucking trouble.
Sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping round my back stairs.
We get the glimpses around the house of the cannibalized cars of all the tourists who have come before. You see all of the kind of makeshift wind chimes made of discarded gear, which we can only suspect were the belongings of those people, right? But we have no idea just how fucked up things are yet. So we get an idea that things are strange, but not dangerous. We haven't reached danger yet.
Hello!
Lesson number two, never walk into a stranger's house.
The first time I saw this, the initial death, when the boyfriend goes into the house and he comes out and just brains him, and he's still twitching on the ground, that still gets me.
And then he hits him again.
Yeah, and then he drags him into the ramp is like an abattoir, right? It's like loading the cattle into the slaughter house, right? It just drags away. And the way that it slammed that door, the finality of slamming that... And it's a steel door, interior door in a house, which by itself doesn't look natural. It's like... It's a factory, right? It is a slaughterhouse, not a real home.
Kirk!
That droning noise that cuts into the next scene. Yeah. So when it cuts to the girl on the swing, you still hear that same noise. It binds her into that danger. And as much as you want to tell the girl on screen, you have to get the fuck out of there. Your boyfriend's dead. Get out. You have a chance to get away from this danger right now, and you're watching her just slowly and methodically walk into the spider's web.
It's like watching Jamie Lee Curtis cross the street to go check on her friend.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. Don't fucking go over there. What are you doing? Do not go into that house, but...
Despite the fact this has no gore, there's one scene in the movie where I almost vomit every single time I see it. And it's when she's looking for her missing friends and she stumbles into the room with all of the bone furniture. And the floor is covered with all the down and feathers from all the butchered chickens and livestock.
Right.
And when she can't handle anymore, she starts to vomit. And she goes face first into that disgusting floor with all those feathers and the debris and the old animal bones. And every time she starts hacking into that pile of feathers, I almost lose it.
Congratulations, you've got good theory. Never see anybody get torn in half with a chainsaw. You don't see anything even remotely that gross. You think of the opportunities that he had when he stuck the girl on the hook and then started carving her boyfriend up in front of her with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
If that was done now, it would be graphic as fuck. There'd be blood going all over the place. But you know what? Watching that scene, every time I watch that scene, it fucks me up. Because he just stuck her on the hook, he's got the chainsaw, and I know he's hacking this guy up in front of her. What the fuck is going through her mind? People, after watching this film and they put it away for 20 years and they watched it again, they're thinking they're watching a cut version of this movie. They're like, where's all the gore? And everybody that makes the film are like, what are you talking about? Where's the gore? And they're like, yeah, there was a whole bunch of gore that I remember seeing in the 70s that's just been cut out. Where is it? And they're like, no, that's not the case. There is never a lot of gore in this film. This movie tricks you into thinking that you're seeing violence, but the implied notion of what's going on is that powerful that it tricks you into thinking that you're seeing something that's worse than...
In your mind.
Exactly.
Hello? Is anybody home? Excuse me, I'm looking for some friend. Hello?
Yeah, they're all dead. Come on in.
Is anybody here?
It's actually more frightening when the third member of the party goes in and opens the freezer, and she's basically just a twitching mass of nerve endings at that point. She's not even really alive. She's just flailing about, right? Just firing off, synapses and just...
When you get that, like, oh my god, she's still alive, here comes the fucking masked guy to fucking smack this guy over the head with the hammer.
Yeah.
You know? And then he goes to the window and he's freaking out because this guy's wondering, where the fuck are these people coming from? You know, he's reacting as somebody who's dealing with a trespasser, and the only way that he knows how, violence. You know? This is a retarded mute who has... He's a product of his environment. The only reason he's so violent is because everybody... His whole family is nuts, and all he knows is to kill and eat people. That's it.
Yeah, even if you look at his teeth, they're almost like they've been kind of sharpened into points.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He had dentures made for that. Yeah, he was an ugly fucker.
Three down and two to go. Sally and her invalid brother Franklin. Who will survive and what will be left of them? You're going to find out. But now it's time to bring in our guest. He's been on the Horror 101 show before. Please welcome Nathan Hamilton, or as we know him in the horror community, the Son of Celluloid.
Son of Celluloid. Son of Celluloid.
Chainsaw Nate, thank you for joining us this evening. Nate, you've been a big Chainsaw fan. Obviously, I've followed you for years now. I've seen a lot of pictures of you with the chainsaw. I know you've been very active in the Fright House scene. So what does it mean for you that now he is gone?
Me and the saw go way back. I ran my first saw in a haunted house when I was 12 years old. And now being 35, I've been doing it for damn near a quarter century. And if you watch that movie... Watch one time through and just concentrate on Gunnar Hansen's eyes. There is so much pathos there. There's so much gravitas there. There's so much that's not in the script. Leatherface is an incredibly deep character. And you really get into his mindset and, adopt that mindset in your own, and you really start to feel for him. And Gunnar Hansen, the amazing artist, there are very few people who can bring that kind of emotion through a mask. And he did it. And we have lost a seriously amazing artist in Gunnar Hansen. And like I said, someone I feel a lot of kinship with. So it really sucks that Gunnar's gone. And a really nice guy. I've met him at a couple of conventions. He was an awesome dude.
Come on, Franklin. It's going to be a fun trip. If I have any more fun today, I don't think I'm going to be able to take it.
The whole thing about Franklin's just fucking with the audience anyway, because he's the most annoying character in cinema history, and they're just trying to see if you will feel bad for rooting for the death of a handicapped dude.
I was just thinking, it's like, because they're always talking about meat and they're cannibals and that, well, you know, it's an unbalanced diet. Every so often you have to throw in some vegetables.
Oh,
Nick.
I said it was terrible.
We were already going to hell.
Hang on. Would that make Franklin Meals on Wheels?
Oh!
I like it.
I like it. Very nice. Well done.
Thank you, sir. I mean, that movie is decades old. But you can still show it to an audience today, like if they haven't seen it or if they have seen it, and it will still have the exact same effect.
Yeah, yeah, and I think Nick proved that because I caught him jumping out of his seat when Franklin's in the dark thinking, hey, I thought I heard something. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, the chainsaw revs up, and there he is, and he starts carving him up. At that point, he jumped out of his chair, and I caught it out of the corner of my eye. I'm like, yes, we got him.
Yeah, every time that happens, I expect a giant fucking mission accomplished banner to fall behind him.
So after one of the most harrowing chases you'll ever see in a horror movie, Sally finally escapes from Leatherface and makes her way back to the gas station, where the owner warned them not to go to the Franklin place. By this time, she is beyond exhausted and half crazy, so it doesn't take much for him to get a jump on her, throw her into a sack, and cart her off to the same house she just ran from. And guess who he picks up along the way? That kooky hitchhiker from the beginning of the film. These two and Leatherface are all brothers, and they're about to have Sally as a guest to one of the most macabre dinner scenes ever filmed.
Look what your brother did to that door! Yeah, he's got no pride in his home! Get her in there!
Titus has always been a mute. He never says anything. He just grunts and whines and wheezes and excitement. Woo! Woo! That kind of shit right there. And you're like, what the fuck is going on behind that mask? Who is this person?
Yeah.
You know? There's so many questions that are unanswered about this character. And the fact that this mute, giant fucking beast thing is tearing after you with a running chainsaw is just... That would scare the fuck out of me. You
know, or the fact that he's terrified of the old man is a bit disturbing, too, on some level, because we've seen him just mercilessly dispatch every person who walks into that house. But
he's a big boy.
Yeah, but that old guy seems to put him in his place.
You goddamn fool! Where are the kids? Where are they? Show me! None of them get away? Are you sure?
Hey, let us face it. Give me a hand with Vampire.
Your favorite scene in the film?
The dinner scene's got to be it. When Grandpa is suckling the blood off her finger.
Oh, Nate, I said the exact same thing. I said that was probably the most memorable and most disturbing scene in the whole movie.
Just let him have a whack.
Hey, Grandpa! We're gonna let you have this one!
See, we're on the same page here.
Yeah, gotcha.
And actually, I interviewed John Dugan a while back, who played Grandpa, and he told me that he didn't know they were going to do that, and he couldn't see a damn thing in the mask, and they actually cut her finger. And so he didn't know until almost 20 years later, like when they were doing a panel at a convention, that he had actually been drinking her blood.
Oh my god.
Well, the good news is you can drink up to a liter of it before you get nauseous.
You can make him stop. No shit.
Shut your mouth. Can't be helped, young lady.
I love that one line when she's like, "You have to stop him. You can't let him kill me." And what does the older brother say? "Oh, it can't be helped."
Yeah, I can't.
What, just like that, just like, oh, this is, you know, it's, you know, this
and
is
goes on with some more insane, you know, folksy-wism. Well, you know, if you want to catch the potato, you got to murder the unicorn first thing in the morning.
Just some things you got to do. Don't mean you have to like it.
You just shut up, remember, you're just a cook, and me and him will handle this.
Get on with it. I won't have this. We ain't in no hurry. You ain't going no place.
That dinner scene. I talked to him, you know, a lot of the, I talked to Marilyn Burns about it and John Dugan about it, and that was all one shoot. They didn't do, they, it was all shot at one time. It took over 20 hours. It was 110 degrees in there. All the meat was rotting. And they just, apparently that was, that they weren't acting after a while. They were actually getting sick and terrified and wanted the hell out of there. So, like, the story of them filming that scene is almost as harrowing as the actual scene itself.
When she is escaping the house for the last time, trying to make her way to the road, and she's injured, and you've got two grown, healthy, you know, homicidal men chasing her, how is she supposed to get away? Well, and you see him doing the serpentine thing.
At first he's just
toying
with her and taunting, and it wasn't until she reached the road that he was actually starting to cut at her.
Right.
The only time you actually ever see the chainsaw do any damage to anyone is when it falls on his leg.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And if you want every movie after this, Leatherface wears a brace because of that damage.
Nice.
Part 2 and Part 3, he's got a brace on the one leg and he's got kind of a limp because of that damage. So they recognize and
continuity.
Put in that continuity of that damage. When she gets away and he's damaged and he's just doing that dance of frustration and anger that this girl got away.
Yeah.
And he's just flailing with the chainsaw doing this dance in the middle of the road. And then it just cuts.
Yeah.
You know, as you, it just cuts to black and that's the end of the movie.
Yeah. The Saw is family, and it really is a death in the family, and it sucks that he's gone. It really does. He was a fixture on the convention scene. Everyone's, you know, and you won't talk to anyone who has a bad thing to say about Gunnar Hansen. Gunnar Hansen was a class act, man. He was one of the best. Always treated his fans great. And an amazing actor that really doesn't get credit for being as good as he is. So, hopefully, you know, with his... Unfortunately, people get discovered after they die. People finally discover their genius. So, maybe with his passing, people will finally look at that performance and that first one as Leatherface and take it for more than a big dude with a chainsaw being scary and really look at the nuance that he brought to that role.
Nate, I thank you very much for joining us here on the show.
No problem, man. Thank you guys for inviting me, and anytime, I'm down to do it again. Saw is family.
The Saw is family.
Saw is family.
Take care, Nate. We'll talk to you soon.
Cheers. Take it easy, guys.
All right.
So here we are again, folks, using our time together to say goodbye to another horror personality that 2015 took from us. One of our longtime listeners, Lee Glenwright, tweeted us right after Gunnar passed away, asking if it was going to be another obituals show. You fucking know it, Lee, and I hope you enjoyed it. The only benefit of this occasion is it giving us a reason to highlight one of the scariest films ever made. And although we're happy to do it, it's getting a little depressing having to say goodbye over and over again.
This may be the purest distillation of insanity I have ever seen captured on film.
For the longest time, that movie was the go-to movie. It was like, okay, you think you're a horror fan? Can you handle the Texas Chainsaw Massacre? Yeah. You know what I mean? Nick's seen it for the first time. Mm-hmm. Let's score it. Nick, since you're the first, the only one in this room who hasn't seen it yet, let's give you the first honor of scoring it.
Well, I've now seen the original, I understand why it's held such a place in the pantheon of horror films. It's unsettling. You know, it's well done, it's frenetic, it, you know, just keeps you on edge. Like, there's no, like, most movies do, like, the lull, like, there's a pacing to it, so you feel almost at ease with what's happening. This movie does not have that. You don't know, like, you'll be in the middle of a shot, you know, you're watching a thing, and suddenly, raccoon skull, look, dude, it's, you know, like, chandelier made of people, you know, like, it's just running around showing you all this shit. And, like, the zoom in on the eye, like, it's almost designed as, like, a bad psychology experiment to put you on edge for 90 minutes. So I'm gonna honestly give it, like, I'm gonna start going in minute increments now. I'm not doing the 5 and the 0. We're getting into nitty-gritties with me. I'm gonna give this a 9.2.
9.2? Excellent score. Nude!
My score is a 9.5, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, I loved every part of this movie. I remembered the first time I watched it. The next times after that, it kept me, like Nick had said, enthralled with every single scene. Yeah, I mean, there was no gore, but I think one of the best parts of this movie is that your imagination took you to where you thought it should go. You know, the anticipation, the imagination. What do you think really happened, or how, you know, did he really, was she really dead, was he really dead, sort of thing. Everything was done well. He didn't need to speak in order to be, you know, fearsome. The brothers were just, you know, maniacs, and just everything was just was done very, very well. It's not dated at all. I really, really enjoyed it.
Brian Stewart.
I'm going to go on 9.5 as well. I think it's a 10 in terms of what it's able to accomplish, because it definitely gets the job done in terms of making you feel uneasy, putting you on edge, and making you just utterly uncomfortable for the entire duration of that film, that there is no other movie which so presents us a sense of mania, of uncontrolled, unbridled, just batshit crazy. It's like the insanity has bled into the film itself, and like it can't be contained. That the actual lens, that the lighting, that the set, everything, it's just like it was directed by the, you know, the inmates at the asylum. It just wasn't about the inmates.
And the end result is something that I don't think has a parallel in horror. There's no other film that matches the level of crazy that this movie gives us.
I'd probably give it a 9.5 as well. I don't know where I'm losing the 0.5. Do I think it's perfect? No. What I appreciate about it is it was a film made in the 70s, set in the 70s, filmed with that 70s grit that just can't be duplicated. This is honestly a movie that you watch even now and you think they don't make films like this. They can't make films like this anymore. I think a small crew got together to make a low-budget horror movie and they let the genie out of the bottle. I think they did everything correct, whether it was luck or talent or a mixture of two, I'm not too sure. But you watch this movie and like you said, it just seems like insanity on celluloid. I've never seen anything else like it. There's no comic relief. I hazard to say it's a bit slow at the beginning. It gives you the chance to get to know these five kids. Like it says, they fall afoul of this bizarre cannibalistic clan, and before they know what's wrong, they're in the spider's web and they're dead. And it's very much the story of the one who got away.
Yeah.
You know, it might be one of the famous final girls, right? We're always talking about the final girls, like Jamie Lee Curtis and Halloween. You got Nancy from Nightmare on Elm Street. You've got Adrienne King as Alice in Friday the 13th. Yeah. Way before all that, you had Sally Hardesty getting away from this chainsaw-wielding maniac Leatherface in 1974.
Right.
It's a gem in horror history. And the fact that we lost the guy that played the original Leatherface is just another sad point of this year.
Oh, I thought you was in a hurry.